Chapter 3. Customs. From the first hour after being captured, laboring through the snowy woods, Fail worried about freezing. Breezes stirred and died, stirred and died. Few of the scattered trees still carried leaves, and most of those hung dead and brown. The breezes swirled through the forest unhindered, and small as the gusts were, they carried ice. Perrin hardly entered her thoughts, except for a hope that he somehow learned of Massima's secret dealings, and of the Shido, of course. Even if that trull Berylaine was the only one who could tell him now. She hoped Berylaine had escaped the ambush and told Perrin everything, and then fallen into a hole and broken her neck. But she had far more pressing concerns than her husband. She had called this weather autumnal, yet people froze to death in a Saldae in autumn, and of her clothes she retained only her dark woolen stockings. One lashed her elbows tight behind her back, while the second had been tied around her neck for a leash. Brave words made scant covering for bare skin. She was too cold for sweat, yet her legs soon ached with the struggle to keep up with her captors. The Shido column, veiled men and maidens, slowed when the snow rose toward their knees, but immediately resumed a steady trot when it sank toward their ankles, and they did not seem to tire. Horses could not have moved faster over the distance. Shivering, she labored on at the end of her leash, doing her best to gulp air through teeth gritted to stop their chattering. The Shido were fewer than she had estimated during the attack, no more than 150, she thought, and nearly all carried spears or bows at the ready. Small chance anyone could surprise them. Always alert, they ghosted along in silence except for the faint crunch of the snow under their soft, knee-high boots. The greens and grays and browns of their clothing stood out against the white landscape, though. Green had been added to the cut-in sore since crossing the Dragon Wall, so Bane and Chiad had told her, to aid concealment in a green land. Why had these people not added white for the winter? As it was, they could be seen at some distance. She tried to notice everything, remember anything that might prove useful later when it came time to escape. She hoped her fellow prisoners were doing as much. Perrin would be hunting for her, certainly, but the thought of rescue never entered her calculations. Wait for rescue, and you might wait forever. Besides, they needed to escape as quickly as possible before their captors joined with the rest of the Shido. She could not see how yet, but there must be a way. The one bit of luck was that the main body of Shido must be days distant. This part of Amadicia was chaos, but thousands of Shido could not be too near without her having heard of them. Once, early on, she tried to look back at the women who had been captured with her, but the only result was a stumbling fall into a snowbank. Half buried in the white powder, she gasped from the icy shock, and gasped again when the great hulking Shido who held her leash set her back on her feet. As wide as Perrin and a full head taller, Rolan simply hauled her upright by a fistful of her hair, set her moving again with a brisk slap on her bare bottom, and once more took up the long strides that forced her to step quickly. The slap might have been given to make a pony move. Despite her nakedness, there was nothing of a man looking at a woman in Roland's blue eyes. Part of her was very grateful. Part of her was vaguely taken aback. She certainly didn't want him gazing at her with lust or even interest, but those bland glances were almost insulting. After that, she made sure not to fall, though as the hours passed without a pause in the march, simply staying upright became more and more of an effort. In the beginning, she worried over which bits of her would freeze first, but by the time morning had rolled into afternoon without a pause in the march, she was focused on her feet. Rolan and those ahead of him trampled a sort of path for her, yet enough snow crust remained for sharp edges, and she began to leave red stains freezing in her footprints. Worse was the cold itself. She had seen frostbite. How long before her toes began to turn black? Staggering, she flexed each foot as she swung it forward and worked her hands constantly. Fingers and toes were in the worst danger, but any exposed skin was at risk. About her face and the rest of her, she could only hope. The flexing hurt, making the cuts on her feet burn, but any feeling was better than none. When sensation went, she would have very little time left. Flex and stride, flex and stride. That filled her thoughts. She kept moving on quivering legs, and kept her hands and feet from freezing. She kept moving. Abruptly, she stumbled into Rolon and rebounded from his wide chest, panting. Half dazed, or maybe more than half, she had not realized that he had stopped. So had the others ahead, a few looking back, the rest looking outward and warily on guard, weapons up, as though expecting attack. That was all she had time to see before Rolon seized a handful of her hair again and bent to lift one of her feet. Light! The man really was treating her like a pony. Releasing her hair and her foot, he snaked an arm around her legs, and the next moment her vision whirled as she was heaved up onto his shoulder, head down beside the horn bow cased on his back. Indignation welled up as he casually shifted her about to find the easiest position for carrying, but she tamped it down as fast as it rose. This was no place or time. Her feet were out of the snow, that was what mattered, and she could catch her breath like this. He could have warned her, though. With an effort, she arched her neck so she could see her companions and felt relief to find them all still there. Naked prisoners, true, but she was sure only a corpse would have been left behind. The others who walked were leashed with stockings or strips of cloth cut from their lost garments, and most also had their arms tied behind. Alejandra was no longer trying to bend double in an attempt to shield herself. Other concerns had replaced modesty for the Queen of Gildan. Panting and trembling, she might have fallen if the squat Shido examining her feet had not supported her by her bound elbows. Squat for an Aiel meant he could have passed unremarked most places, except for shoulders nearly as wide as Roland's. The dark hair spilling down Alejandra's back was wind-blown, her face haggard. Behind her, Megden appeared in almost as bad a state, gulping air, red-gold hair in disarray and blue eyes staring, yet she managed to stay erect on her own, with a bone-lean maiden lifting her foot. Somehow Fael's maid looked more a queen than Alejandra did, if a very disheveled queen. In comparison, Bane and Chiad seemed in no worse state than did the Shido, though Chiad's cheek was yellowing and swollen from a blow when they were first taken, and the black blood matting Bane's short fiery hair and spread across her face seemed to have frozen. That was bad. That could scar. The two maidens were not breathing hard, though, and even raised their own feet for examination. Alone of the prisoners they were unbound, except by custom stronger than chains. They had calmly accepted their fate, to serve a year and a day as Gaishain. Bane and Chiad might be of some help in escaping. Fael was not sure how far custom constrained them, but they themselves would not try to get away. The last prisoners, Lasiel and Arala, attempted to pattern themselves after the maidens, of course, with indifferent success. A tall Aiel man had simply tucked tiny Lasiel under his arm to look at her feet, and crimson mortification stained her pale cheeks. Arala was tall, but the pair of maidens who had charge of her were taller than Fael herself, and they handled the Tyran woman with impersonal ease. A scowl contorted her dark face at their prodding, and maybe at the rapid hand-talk they were exchanging. Fael hoped she would not make trouble, not now. Everyone in Cha Fael tried to be like the Aiel, to live as they thought the Aiel did, but Arala wanted to be a maiden, and she resented the fact that Sulin and the others would not teach her hand-talk. She would have been worse if she knew Bane and Chiad had taught Fael a little. Not enough to make out more than every other word the maidens were saying now, but some. As well, Arala could not understand. They thought the Wetlander had soft feet, that she was altogether too pampered and soft, and that surely would have set the woman off. As it turned out, Fael need not have worried about Arala. The Tyran stiffened when one of the maidens hefted her onto a shoulder. Pretending to stagger, the burdened woman used her free hand to flicker a message that made the other maiden bark a laugh behind her veil. But after a glance at Bane and Chiad, already meekly belly down on Aielman's shoulders, Arala sullenly let herself hang limp. Lasiel squealed when the big man holding her abruptly spun her about to land in the same position, but she quieted after that, though her face was still bright scarlet. There were definite advantages to their emulation of Aiel. Alejandra and Megden, however, the last women Fael would have expected to cause problems, were another matter entirely. When they realized what was happening, the pair of them fought wildly. It was not much of a fight, two naked and exhausted women with their elbows bound tight behind their backs, but they twisted and shouted and kicked at anyone who came within reach, and Magdan even sank her teeth into the hand of a careless Aiel man, hanging on like a boarhound. "Stop it, you fools!" Fael called to them. "Aleandra! Magdan! Let them carry you! Obey me!" Neither her maid nor her vassal paid the slightest heed. Magdan growled like a lion around her mouthful of Aiel. Aleandra was wrestled down, still shouting and flailing with her feet. Fael opened her mouth for another command.
"The guy Shine will be quiet,"
Roland grunted, spanking her hard. She ground her teeth and muttered under her breath, which earned another slap. The man had her knives tucked behind his belt. If she could lay hands on just one... No. What must be endured could be endured. She intended to escape, not make useless gestures. Magdan's fight lasted a little longer than Aleandra's, until a pair of burly men could pry her jaws from the Shido's hand. It required a pair. To Fael's surprise, instead of cuffing Magdan, the bitten fellow shook blood off his hand and laughed. That did not save her, though. In a trice, Fael's maid was face down in the snow alongside the queen. They were given only a few moments to gasp and writhe in the added cold. Two Shido, one a maiden, appeared out of the surrounding trees, shaving the stubs from long switches with their heavy belt knives. A foot planted between each woman's shoulder blades, a fist on bound elbows to raise fluttering hands out of the way, and red welts began to bloom on white hips. At first, both women continued to fight, twisting about despite the way they were held. Their struggle was even more useless than when they were upright. Little moved above their waists beyond tossing heads and wildly waving hands. Aleandra kept shrilling that they could not do this to her, understandable coming from a queen, if foolish in the circumstances. Plainly, they could and they were. Surprisingly, Magdan raised her voice in the same piercing denials. Anyone would have thought her royalty instead of a lady's maid. Fael knew for a fact that Lini had taken a switch to Magdan without all these histrionics. In any case, denials did no good for either woman. The methodical thrashings continued until they both were kicking and howling wordlessly, and a little longer for good measure. When they were finally hoisted like the other prisoners, they hung weeping, all fight gone out of them. Fael felt no sympathy. The fools had earned every stripe, in her opinion. Frostbite and cut feet aside, the longer they remained outside without clothes, the more chance that some of them might not survive to escape. The Shido had to be taking them to some sort of shelter, and Aleandra and Magdan had delayed reaching it. Maybe it was little more than a quarter hour's delay, but minutes could be the difference between the living and the dead. On top of which, even Aiel would surely let down their guard a little once they found shelter and made fires. And they could rest, being carried. They could be ready to take their chance when it came. Carrying their prisoners, the Shido set out again at that ground-covering pace. If anything, they seemed to move through the forest more quickly than before. The hard leather bow-case bumped Fael's side as she swayed, and she began to feel dizzy. Roland's every long stride sent a jolt through her middle. Surreptitiously, she tried to find some position where she would not be poked and thudded quite so vigorously.
"Be still, or you will fall," Roland muttered, patting her hip as he might have patted a horse to soothe it.
Raising her head, Fael peered back at Aleandra, scowling. There was not much to be seen of the Queen of Gildan, and that crisscrossed by scarlet welts from the tops of her hips almost to the backs of her knees. Come to think of it, a short delay and a few stripes might be a small price to pay for biting a chunk out of this oaf toting her like a sack of grain. Not his hand, though. His throat would be about right. Bold thoughts, and worse than useless. Foolish. Even being carried, she knew she must fight the cold. In some ways, she began to realize, being carried was worse. Walking, at least she had had the struggle to stay erect and on her feet to keep her awake. But as evening came on and deepened to darkness, the swaying motion on Roland's shoulders seemed to have a lulling effect. No,
It was the cold that was numbing her mind, making her blood sluggish. She had to fight it, or she would die. Rhythmically, she worked her hands and bound arms, tensed her legs and relaxed them, tensed and relaxed, forcing her muscles to work her blood. She thought of Perrin, solid planning thoughts of what he should do about Massima and how she could convince him if he balked. She went over the argument they would have when he learned she had been using Chafail as spies, planned how she would meet his anger and turn it. There was an art to guiding a husband's anger in the direction you wanted, and she had learned from an expert, her mother. It would be a splendid argument, and a splendid making up after. Thinking about making up with him made her forget to work her muscles, so she tried to concentrate on the argument, on the planning. Cold dulled her thoughts, though. She began losing the thread, having to shake her head and start over. Roland's growls at her to be still helped, a voice to focus on, to keep her awake. Even the accompanying slaps on her upturned bottom helped, as much as she hated to admit the fact, each one a shock that jolted her to wakefulness. After a while, she began shifting more, then struggling almost to the point of falling, courting the rude smacks, anything to stay awake. She could not have said how much time passed, but her twists and wriggles began to weaken until Roland no longer growled, much less gave her a slap. Light. She wanted the man to play her like a drum. "Why in the light would I want a thing like that?" she thought dully, and a dim corner of her mind realized the battle was lost. The night seemed darker than it should be. She could not even make out the glow of moonlight on the snow. She could feel herself sliding, though, sliding faster and faster toward a deeper dark. Wailing silently, she sank into a stupor. Dreams came. She was sitting on Perrin's lap with his arms so tight around her she could barely move, before a great fire roaring in a broad stone fireplace. His curly beard scratched her cheeks as he nipped her ears almost painfully. Suddenly a huge wind howled through the room, snuffing the fire like a candle, and Perrin turned to smoke that vanished in the gale. Alone in bitter darkness she fought the wind, but it tumbled her end over end until she was so dizzy she could not tell up from down. Alone and endlessly tumbling into icy dark, knowing she would never find him again. She ran across a frozen land, floundering from snowdrift to snowdrift, falling, scrambling up to run on in panic, gulping air so cold it sliced her throat like shards of glass. Icicles sparkled on stark branches around her, and a frigid wind keened through the leafless forest. Perrin was very angry, and she had to get away. Somehow she could not recall the specifics of the argument, just that somehow she had pushed her beautiful wolf to real anger, to the point of throwing things. Only Perrin did not throw things. He was going to turn her over his knee, as he had done once long ago. Why was she running from that, though? There would still be the making up, and she would make him pay for the humiliation, of course. Anyway, she had drawn a little blood from him a time or two with a well-aimed bowl or pitcher, not really meaning to, and she knew he would never really hurt her. But she also knew that she had to run, to keep moving, or she would die. "If he catches me," she thought dryly, "at least part of me will be warm." And she began to laugh at that, until the dead white land spun around her, and she knew that soon she would be dead too. The monstrous bonfire loomed over her, a towering pile of thick logs roaring with flame. She was naked and cold, so cold. No matter how near the fire she edged, her bones felt frozen, her flesh ready to shatter at a blow. She moved closer, closer. The heat of the blaze grew till she flinched at it, but the bitter cold remained trapped inside her skin. Closer. Oh, light, it was hot, too hot, and still cold within. Closer. She began to scream at the burning, the searing pain, but she was still ice inside. Closer, closer. She was going to die. She shrieked, but there was only silence and the cold. It was daylight, but leaden clouds filled the sky. Snow fell in a steady shower, feathery flakes swirling in the wind through the trees. Not a fierce wind, but it licked with tongues of ice. Ridges of white built on branches until they were tall enough to collapse from their own weight and the wind, sending heavier showers to the ground below. Hunger gnawed her belly with dull teeth. A very tall, bony man with a white woolen cowl sheltering his face forced something into her mouth, the rim of a large clay mug. His eyes were a startling green, like emeralds, and surrounded by puckered scars. He was kneeling on a large brown woolen blanket with her, and another blanket, striped in gray, was draped around her nakedness. The taste of hot tea, thick with honey, exploded on her tongue, and she seized the man's sinewy wrist weakly with both hands in case he tried to take the mug away. Her teeth chattered against the mug, but she gulped the steaming, syrupy liquid greedily.
"Not too fast. You must not spill any," the green-eyed man said meekly.
Meekness sounded odd from that fierce face, and in a gravelly voice.
"They offended your honor, but you are a wetlander, so maybe it does not count with you."
Slowly it dawned on her that this was no dream. Thought came in a trickle of shadows that melted if she tried to hold them too hard. The white-robed brute was Gaishin. Her leash and bonds were gone. He pulled his wrist away from her feeble grip, but only to pour a dark stream from a leather water bag hanging from his shoulder. Steam rose from the mug, and the aroma of tea. Shivering so hard she almost fell over, she clutched the thick striped blanket around her. Fiery pain was blossoming in her feet. She could not have stood had she tried. Not that she wanted to. The blanket managed to cover everything but her feet so long as she remained in a crouch. Standing would have bared her legs, and maybe more. It was warmth she thought of, not decency, though there was little of either to be had. Hunger's teeth grew sharp, and she could not stop shaking. She was frozen inside, the tea's heat already just a memory. Her muscles were weak old congealed pudding. She wanted to stare at the filling mug, coveting the contents, but she made herself look for her companions. They were all there in a line with her, Magdin and Alejandra and everyone slumped on their knees atop blankets, shivering inside blankets speckled with snow. In front of each, a Gaishin knelt with a bulging water bag and a mug or cup, and even Bane and Chiad drank like women half dead of thirst. Someone had cleaned the blood from Bane's face, but unlike the last time Fail had seen them, the two maidens were as drawn and unsteady as anyone else. From Alejandra to Lucille, her companions looked, what was Perrin's phrase, as if they had been dragged through a knothole backwards. But everyone was still alive. That was the important thing. Only the living could escape. Rolan and the other Algae de Sisway who had had charge of them made a cluster at the far end of the kneeling line. 5 men and 3 women, the snow on the ground nearly knee-deep on the maidens. Black veils hanging down their chests, they watched their prisoners and the Gaishin impassively. For a moment she frowned at them, trying to grasp a slippery thought. Yes, of course. Where were the others? Escape would be easier if the rest had gone for some reason. There was something more, another misty question she could not quite catch. Suddenly what lay beyond the 8 Aiel leaped out at her, and question and answer came at the same time. Where had the Gaishin come from? 100 paces or so distant, veiled by the scattered trees and falling snow, a steady stream of people and pack animals, wagons and carts was flowing by. Not a stream, a flood of Aiel on the move. Instead of 150 Shido, she had the whole clan to contend with. It seemed impossible that so many people could pass within a day or two of Abela without raising some alarm, even with the countryside in anarchy. But the proof was right in front of her eyes. Inside she felt leaden. Maybe escape would be no harder, but she did not believe it. "How did they offend me?" she asked jerkily, then clamped her mouth shut to stop chattering, and opened it again as the Gaishin raised the mug to her once more. She gulped the precious heat, choking, and forced herself to swallow more slowly. The honey, so thick it would have been cloying any other time, dulled her hunger a little.
"You wetlanders know nothing," the scarred man said dismissively. "Gaishin are not clothed in any way until they can be given proper robes, but they feared you would freeze to death and all they had to wrap you was their coats. You were shamed, named as weak, if wetlanders have shame. Rolan and many of the others are Meridin, yet Ephalin and the rest should know better. Ephalin should not have allowed it."
Shamed? Infuriated was more like it.
Unwilling to turn her head from the blessed mug, she rolled her eyes toward the hulking giant who had carried her like a sack of grain and smacked her unmercifully. Vaguely, she seemed to recall welcoming those spanks, but that was impossible. Of course it was impossible. Roland did not look like a man who had half-trotted through most of a day and a night besides carrying someone. His white misted breath came easily. Meridin? She thought that would mean brotherless in the old tongue, which told her nothing, but there had been a note of scorn in the Guy Shine's voice. She would have to ask Bane and Chiad, and hope it was not one of those things Aiel would not talk about to wetlanders, not even wetlanders who were close friends. Any piece of knowledge might aid escape. So they had wrapped their prisoners up against the cold, had they? Well, no one would have been in any danger of freezing except for Roland and the others. Still, she might owe him a small favor. Very small, considering everything. Perhaps she would only slice off his ears, if she ever got the chance, surrounded by thousands of Shido. Thousands? The Shido numbered in the hundreds of thousands, and tens of thousands of those were Algai de Siswai. Furious with herself, she fought despair. She would escape. They would all escape, and she would take the man's ears with her. "I will see Roland's repaid as he deserves," she muttered, when the Guy Shine took the mug away for refilling again. He gave her a narrow-eyed, suspicious stare, and she hurried. "As you say, I am a wetlander. Most of us are. We don't follow Jih-Ito. By your customs, we shouldn't be made Guy Shine at all, is that not right?" The man's scarred face did not change, not by so much as the twitch of an eyelid. A dim thought said it was too soon. She did not know the ground yet, but thoughts gelid with cold could not catch her tongue. What if the Shido decide to break other customs? They might decide not to let you go when your time is done.
"The Shido break many customs," he told her placidly. "But I do not. I have over half a year yet to wear white. Until then I will serve as custom demands. If you can talk so much, maybe you have had enough tea?"
Fael clumsily snatched the mug from him. His eyebrows lifted, and she rearranged her draperies one-handed as quickly as she could manage, her cheeks heating. He certainly knew he was looking at a woman. Light, she was blundering about like a blind ox. She had to think, to concentrate. Her brain was the only weapon she had, and at the moment it might as well have been frozen cheese. Drinking deep of the hot, sweet tea, she set herself to thinking of some way that being surrounded by thousands of Shido could be turned to advantage. Nothing came to her, though. Nothing at all.